Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to lesson one of Alpine's lead pastor training. I'm Pastor Brian, joined in the studio by Pastor John Bellis. John, before we jump into this first of five lessons, why don't we talk real quickly about what are we going to be covering in this five-part series, and who should be taking this, right? Who should be involved in this series?
Well, what we're going to be covering is both the spiritual and the practical in this series for individuals who are lead pastors in our Alpine structure, for individuals who are, you know, campus directors, even overseers who want to be able to come along beside their lead pastor and better support and equip them. And we just want to make sure that we are equipping individuals that God has called into this role, that they have a realistic expectation of what the role is, the different parts of the job description. And so we're going to take some very, I guess you'd say, big picture views, you know, philosophy of ministry, things like that, but then all the way down to, you know, very minute detail-oriented things like how do you follow up on a first-time visitor workflow card, for example.
Right. Okay, so before we jump in, John, I guess we should tell your story because you came on at Alpine up in Logan. You came on, first of all, as an associate guy under Pastor Chad. He did a great job kind of training you up, bringing you up. And then eventually, when he stepped away from that role, you filled in, which was great. But over the years, we've realized that transition was pretty healthy and good, because I think Chad just kind of one-on-one helped you and slowly gave you responsibilities. But some of our other pastors would have loved something like this, right? To say, I really need to be oriented to this role before I jump into it. I really need to try to wrap my mind around it and help me understand. Would this have been helpful for you, I guess, if you would have had this?
It would have been extremely helpful. You know, I had the benefit of, like you said, Brian, I kind of eased into it. You know, I was on staff part-time for almost 2 years before I took a full-time role, and so I was able to see Chad in action. I got a really good feel for what being a lead pastor in Alpine structure is like. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of guys, especially if they were to come into it from maybe a different organization, a different church, or even I remember growing up as a kid what I thought a pastor did. And I distinctly remember probably only 3 or 4 weeks into my full-time role as the lead pastor in Logan, I had my "so this is what a pastor does" moment. I was in the attic of our church, getting rid of pigeons and leaking water and hauling buckets down a, you know, staircase. And I thought, oh, this is what a pastor does.
Right. So that's lesson, I think, three in our series.
How to remove pigeons. Lesson three.
Well, that's true. Even in I went to seminary. I remember thinking going to seminary. We studied theology and doctrine and all kinds of stuff. Very, very little of it was used kind of Monday through Friday. Now, you know, for sermon prep, sure, but there's so many things that a pastor does that you kind of have to just be thrown into, and that's what we've put this series together. John, appreciate you taking the lead on this. I said, hey, how many lessons would we need to train the next campus pastor at Alpine, and what would those lessons be? And this is our first shot at that. So I think this is going to be really helpful for generations of pastors at Alpine Church. And, you know, really the goal here, if you're listening, the goal is to get you to listen to this podcast and then make sure to get together with whoever's bringing you through this and talk through the details of this. You know, some of this stuff is going to apply directly to what you're going through. Some of it maybe later on, or some of it you might have to tweak a little bit and figure out what does and doesn't apply. But a lot of this stuff is, like you said, John, it's general, but it's also specific enough to really be helpful for the Alpine lead pastor out there, campus pastor, someone who's leading at a campus. Let's start with this then, John. Why is lesson one about leading leaders? You know, there's a lot of other stuff. This is, in essence, this is kind of like a philosophy of ministry thing a little bit. I mean, we're going to get practical here, but why is leading leaders the first thing we want to make sure to talk about with our future lead pastors?
Well, we're kicking off with this particular topic because I really believe, aside from the work of the Holy Spirit, obviously, your ability to lead leaders will have the largest impact on your ministry's ability to grow. If you are a one-man show, if you're not able to effectively identify and equip and raise up other leaders around you, you're going to put a cap on how much ministry you can do. Mm-hmm. You know, one of our other pastors here at Alpine, Pastor Jared, uses the term roadblock a lot. Mm-hmm. And he said there were times when he recognized that he was a roadblock because everything had to go through him. And that's just, we're just going to limit our ability to really build the kingdom of God if we do that.
Yeah, if everything has to go through you, then you're going to be that roadblock. You're going to, you know, everything's going to kind of get gummed up. And it's true. I think even 75 to 80 people might, I don't even know if really one person can genuinely lead that many people. Because when we're talking about leading, some of that is going to be task-oriented, Sunday morning tasks, midweek tasks. But it's not just tasks. More importantly, we're going to get into this later in the series. More importantly, it's about discipling. And you can't disciple everybody. One person can't disciple everybody. So Jesus even knew that, right?
Oh, and that's how Jesus modeled it, right? Yeah. You know, Jesus taught many, but he really poured into 12. And then even out of those 12, he really poured into 3. And it's one of our core values. You know, so anyone who's going through this training is an Alpiner. And one of our core values is we win as a team, not individuals. It's very important to us. So we're always on the lookout for ways to raise up leaders from within the body. And that means we have to learn how to give ministry away. And for some of us who tend to be controlling, if we're not careful, that can be really difficult. That can be scary. And one of the things that's helped me in that is I just remember that God loves his church even more than I do. And he's the one who told me to give ministry away, right? It's part of my calling as a pastor, really.
Yeah, and there's this great story in Exodus 18. I encourage people to go look it up for yourself, where Moses is out there. He's trying to lead the people of Israel. And he, I can still relate to him, John. I don't know if you can relate to Moses in Exodus 18, but he's overwhelmed with ministry. You know, he doesn't call it that, but that's essentially what it is, right? He's the one leader for all these people during the Exodus, and he's failing at his job. He's wearing himself out, and he's wearing the people out. He's frustrating the people, and he's wearing himself out. I think every pastor of a smaller church has been there, and people who are listening need to know you'll be there. If you don't pay attention to what we're talking about today, in fact, you might be there even if you do pay attention. But one of the things we see in Exodus 18 is that Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, comes to him and gives him a nice little pep talk. He basically says, hey, why are you trying to do all of this on your own? He said, you need to organize the people, organize the community, we would call it the congregation. You need to organize a congregation in such a way that people can minister to people, that it's not all down to you. So it's really what he's saying is give ministry away. We win as a team, not as an individual, Moses, and structure is going to be important to accomplish that.
Yeah, and he gave Moses a system to do it. Now, you know, I'm not saying you have to use the same system that he gave Moses, but we're going to talk about a little bit later in this conversation, even the idea of an org chart. So there is something powerful to having an organized system to developing leaders within your church.
Yeah, we'll get into that here at the end as we get really practical at the end. Before we do that, one more thing from Scripture that I think we need to recognize here, because it's not just the Old Testament that talks about organizing a church. It's actually also in the New Testament. And if you're listening to this and you've been around Alpine for any length of time, this will not come as a surprise to you. But Ephesians chapter 4, starting in verse 11, really is, I think, the job description. We should start with that for a pastor. The job description for a pastor. Paul writes this in verse 11. Now, these are the gifts that Christ gave to the church: apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. So that's like we would say maybe the paid staff at Alpine. And verse 12 is the job description. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. Notice, their responsibility isn't to do all the work. Lead pastors, our responsibility is to equip people to do the work. And then what will happen, here's the payoff in verse 13, this will continue until we all come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature in the Lord, measuring up to the full and complete standard of Christ. So what that means is, if the pastor gets his job right, giving away ministry, especially discipling, right, empowering people to be disciple makers and other things, then what will happen is not only will you not be worn out, but the benefit is, verse 13, that everyone's going to grow up. Because as we say, we grow by helping someone else. And so if we want to help someone grow, we need to get them in the game.
Exactly. It fits right into the framework of our full circle pursuit of God, right? As we empower people in our congregation to help others, they're going to grow in their faith, just like it says in verse 13, that as we do that, we're going to mature in the Lord, measuring up to the full and complete standard of Christ.
Okay, so now with all of that in the background, John, let's get really specific and let's talk about org chart. Okay, so the org chart is really the sort of the what. When we talk about leading leaders, the next question you might have is, okay, well, what positions do I need to fill? Before we talk about who should fill those positions, let's talk about what positions need to be filled, and that's what the org chart's for.
Yeah, and I can just imagine some of the guys right now as we get into this are probably rolling their eyes a little bit. You know, isn't this a little sterile, guys? Isn't this a little commercial that we would have an org chart? But again, you know, you go back to the Jethro story, he gave Moses some clear parameters on how to set up these other men who are going to help judge. And one of the nice things about an org chart is it's a tool that will give you really a visualization of how your different teams work together. You know, for example, how does your usher and greeter team at Alpine, for example, work alongside your safety team? Or how does your sound and media team work alongside your worship team on a Sunday morning? So it's really helpful to be able to put that on paper, to be able to see how the different teams work together. Now, not every campus org chart at Alpine is identical. We don't all have the exact same org chart, but there are definitely some commonalities. Most of us have 5 or 6 legs to our org chart, and that typically will limit an individual's direct reports to 4 or 5 people. As we said earlier, you know, realistically, especially a layperson, can you handle more than 4 or 5 direct reports that you're responsible for, not only for the task to get done, but for mentoring and discipleship? And so that's worked really well. If you have a volunteer leader who's, you know, retired or semi-retired, maybe they could take on more, but typically 4 to 5 is a good rule of thumb. And then one of the things that I always encourage folks to do is if you have someone who's really high capacity, maybe you have someone who is retired and they're just super high capacity, and they could lead, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams at your campus. When they replace themselves, though, when they move on, when God calls them to something new, are you likely to find somebody else who could fill that role in the same way? So, again, just be careful of that. We're going to put a link down at the bottom of this conversation to some of the sample org charts that we have, and we think that'll be helpful for you. The other purpose for an org chart is it gives everybody clarity on who they're accountable to. Who do I report to at the end of the week or at the end of the day or at the end of the quarter? Who's going to make sure that they're holding me accountable to what I need to get done and also encouraging me, obviously praying for me? All those things are important. So an org chart is going to help you do that.
Okay, so John, like you mentioned, we'll have links to those org charts down below, but just for the sake of this episode, why don't you walk us through the legs of your org chart at the Logan campus, and then maybe let's talk about what percentage of those seats are filled, I guess.
At any given time.
At any given time.
Because there's always ebb and flow. I mean, that's the reality of ministry.
Yeah. So I think it's helpful for people to realize that. I know that people might be listening to this getting a little panicky, thinking, I've got to be in charge of this huge, massive org chart. And in particular, if somebody's listening to this about ready to take over a campus or you're new at a campus, honestly, that's when org charts probably shift the most. So it's going to be sort of a work in progress. I think people should recognize that. Don't be too hard on yourself. So, John, just talk about that on a practical level from your campus. Let's just kind of be real here with folks. What does your org chart look like, and which areas are harder to fill than others?
Yeah, great. So the org chart that we use at the Logan campus, I have 5 legs to it. The first leg, we call it our connections. And so that includes our social media person. It includes our welcome desk that handles first-time visitor requests, things like that. It includes our database team. So that's part of our connections leg. The next leg is our weekend services. So as you can imagine, that's everything involved in running a service on a Sunday. And one of the things that multiple pastors have said as part of our structures is Sundays keep coming. Right? Sundays just keep coming. And so we want to make sure those are excellent.
Yeah.
And it takes a team to do that. And so then the third one is our ministry team's leg of our org chart, which would include, for Logan anyway, it includes our kids' church director, our small group ministry, our youth ministry, our mentors, and then like our men's and women's groups. So those are all kind of ministry teams. We have an operations and facilities leg of our org chart, which would be your buildings and grounds, your clean team, your admin team, your decor team for holidays, all those type of events. And then lastly, we have a pastoral care leg, which would be hospitality, hospital visits, meals, prayer requests. So those are the five legs of the org chart. And I oversee three of those legs. Again, I'm trying to give ministry away all the time. And then I have overseers who take vital roles in two of the legs out of the five.
Okay, so then each leg, so you have five legs, but then each leg has, it sounded like you listed four, five, six, maybe even sometimes more sub-teams within that leg. So does each one of those teams have a leader in a, in an ideal world?
Ideally, yes. And I'm looking at my org chart now based on your question. I would say our org chart right now has leaders in about 80, 85% of the roles that we've identified in Logan. So we have a handful of roles that currently we don't have a leader. And when that happens, depending upon which leg it's in, either myself or one of our overseers, or we do have an associate campus director in Logan, mm-hmm. we'll kind of take up the slack if we don't have somebody leading that team.
Well, yeah, because otherwise, this is what we've told people over the years is, look, if you've got an empty spot on the org chart, it defaults to you. Or what I've been helping out in Layton over the last several months, what I tell the overseers, I've given a leg to each overseer for them to oversee. And what I've said to them is, look, if we're missing someone, like, you're filling in until you can raise up a leader for that, right? And so that's kind of the rule of thumb that we use. And again, you know, there's always going to be some flux with the org chart, but you don't want 50% of that thing being blank, then you're going to be in trouble, right?
And I think one of the ways to look at it is the org chart is, you know, it's almost a living thing, right? It's not something that's static. You'll never just fill it and then put it away and say, we're done. Hmm. Because you're always going to have turnover. You know, one of our campuses is by a military base here in northern Utah, and mm-hmm. so there's always turnover with that. I live in a college town, so we have a lot of folks who are there for two or three, four or five years, and they're gone. So you're always looking for that. And one of the things that you can really do as a lead pastor is you can make this leading leaders a mindset at your campus. And I just will admit to those listening to this call, like, that's something I'm getting better at in Logan. And we've been beating the drum now for the last probably year and a half, 2 years. Like, if you're leading a team, the first thing I want you to be praying about and thinking about and really being strategic about is, who's going to replace me? Who can I start pouring into? Because that's going to lead to discipleship. Mm-hmm. That's going to lead to mentoring. So that when there is turnover, you just slide the next person, you know, next man up, mm-hmm. right? Or next woman up.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the what. That's the org chart. Let's kind of talk about the who now. John, how do you, as a pastor, how do you identify someone to fill one of those spots on the org chart?
And I think that's a great question, because anybody can get a piece of paper out and make some fancy lines and move some boxes around. But really the tough part is, well, who's going to fill that? So these are just some things that I look for when I'm trying to identify a potential leader. The first question I ask is, who's mentoring? You know, if that's what we're trying to create, if we want a culture of discipleship, a culture of mentoring, who's already doing that? You know, who's already mentoring someone? Who's serving? Who shows up every time we decorate the campus for Christmas? Who shows up early every time we have a snowstorm? Even though I have a snow team, and mm-hmm. our snow team does a good job, shout mm-hmm. out to the Logan snow team, there are a couple of men at our campus that if it's a heavy snow, I notice they show up early, just in case it didn't get done, mm-hmm. and then they can help. So those are things that I'm looking for. And I think of when Samuel is sent to anoint, you know, the next king of Israel, and all of Jesse's sons kind of parade by, and with each one, Samuel goes, oh, this has got to be the guy. You know, he's strong, he's, you know, he's handsome, he's the oldest, he's whatever. And every time God says, that's not him. You know, quit looking at all the outward abilities. I look at the heart. Now, clearly, for certain roles in our structure, individuals need to have some ability. So I'm not saying that ability doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I am saying oftentimes a skill can be learned. But if they don't have that heart for service, if they don't have that heart for discipleship, right, it's going to be tough to create that in them.
Yeah, that's actually how we found our second ever lead pastor. So we had opened years ago, we had opened our Riverdale campus, and it had exploded in growth. It was really an exciting time at Alpine before we were two campuses even. And we realized that by the end of that next year, we better be ready to launch another campus. Well, Jared, who's now our pastor, Jared was one of those guys that was just always there. We were still painting rooms. We were still finishing rooms at the Riverdale location. And Jared was a guy, he was just a small group leader at the time, but he was a guy that just was always rolling up his sleeves. He was always serving. It was like he was one of us. He was there as much as the pastors were there. So when it came time, in short order, to think about who the pastor of the next campus would be, he was the most obvious choice. We said, well, what about Jared? Do you think he could be? Now, again, we didn't know if he had any of the other skills that he needed to have, but we knew that he had the right heart. We knew that he was a servant. And today he's on our executive team. He led the Layton campus for over 12 years. He's got an incredible heart, and that's what we're looking for. Not just for our pastors, but we're looking for that for the org charts, people that are available.
For sure. And the other thing that I would just think of with this is who's consistently there. I mean, that's a similar, but who, you know, some guys, if their pet project comes along, they get really excited about it and they get really invested. But then if there's something else happening at the church that's not really their thing, you know, you never hear from them. Like, who's consistently there and willing to get in? And then the other thing I look for is this idea of owners versus renters. Mm-hmm. So if someone notices an issue at your campus, do they just bring the complaint to you or do they bring a solution to you, right? So I'll give you an example. Recently, for the guy that's now leading our coffee team, we had some issues just with, you know, prices have gone up, and so we went from using the particular brand of coffee we've been using to Folgers. Mm. And we got some beef, right? We got some complaints from our coffee lovers. And Mike, you know, Mike didn't complain about it. He said, hey, look, what can I do? I know a couple of guys in the Valley that might be able to get us a better price for coffee. Can I go out and connect with them and see if we can make that happen? So here's a guy that's not even on that team at the time, recognizes a problem, and instead of just handing it off to someone, said, hey, I'll take ownership of it. Can I help you out?
Yeah, that's what an owner does versus a renter. I remember years ago before I was married, a few other bachelors and I rented a house together for the year. And I remember a couple of those guys, literally, this is embarrassing to admit, they would shoot BB guns in the house, like at a wall. I'm like, so there was like a wall at the rental house that just was embedded with BBs all throughout the wall. And I remember thinking to myself, would you do that if this was your home? Of course you wouldn't.
Right.
They're doing it because they're renting it. They don't care about it. They're paying and it's going to be someone else's problem. And that's what we're talking about. In fact, I encourage leaders to use that with your leadership teams. I shared this with the leadership team and it really helped. You know, the next Sunday, people were cleaning up, were picking stuff up off the floor. And again, there's pride of ownership. This is my house. This is my church. I'm not going to just look for the pastor to come take care of this. I'm going to take care of it myself. So always be on the lookout for people who view your church like that. They're an owner, not just a renter. And then what about, you know, 1 Corinthians 12 talks about a diversity of talents. You don't want, right, John, you don't want everyone to be just like you. You ideally, you want people who have gifts that you don't have.
Amen. I mean, not everybody's a hand, not everybody's an eye, and not everybody sees things the same way that I do. Now, we have some core values at Alpine that we want everybody to buy into, right? We hope in those core things, in our core doctrine, our core theology, we hope that we're all identical.
Right.
But we're not going to have identical gifts. I mean, the Bible's clear. And even just our perspective. So, I mean, I'm in my late 40s now. I'm going to be hitting 50 pretty soon. And I recognize I need people in our leadership teams in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
I need women in our leader. Now, you know, we don't have women pastors at Alpine, right? And I think that's biblical. But I need different perspectives than just my own. Because if we have six Johns running around, that's the only perspective we have.
Right. And by the way, let's speak to that. Just because we don't have women pastors, because, again, you can check out some other videos for why that is, but we look to God and his word in all that we do, and we believe it's clear in God's word that there should be a line drawn at that pastoral role, but that doesn't mean women aren't leaders at Alpine. We have women leading, and really that org chart should have lots of women's names on it, right, John?
I certainly think so. I think that's a blessing. I think God uses that in very powerful ways. I have some very high capacity women leaders at our campus.
Yeah.
So, and again, it gives you better perspectives, because on any given Sunday, I was going to say half the people in your congregation, it's probably not half. It's probably 2/3.
Yeah, right.
Of the people coming in are women, and so do they have a voice, you know, right, in our leadership?
Right. That's good. You know, we can't really talk about qualifications without the obvious. I think it's also important that the people in your org chart buy into the Alpine Way. You know, go through the Alpine Way in the leader resources on our website. Make sure that you buy, make sure that they buy into it, right? Make sure they buy into our core values. Because, John, isn't there a temptation? I know probably you and I have both fallen for this, to just hurry up and fill that spot.
Totally. We all feel that pressure, especially if you do use an org chart.
Yeah.
You see that empty box with no name on it, yep, and you feel that pressure to fill it. And I know early on in my role in Logan, I put some people into leadership positions that didn't buy into our vision.
Mm-hmm.
They're great people. They're Christians. I fully believe they're Christians. They love Jesus. But they didn't buy into the Alpine Way, some of the things that we say in the Alpine Way. So, for example, one of those is, you know, we believe Sunday is a gateway service.
Right.
And so we always try to run things through, you know, the perspective of what would a non-church person understand about this, or would this be confusing for them? Would this be offensive? Now, you know, we've said before, I don't mind offending someone with the gospel,
mm-hmm,
but I don't want to offend someone with Christianese,
mm-hmm,
right? And so I've had people in leadership positions that didn't buy into that. And so then there's friction and there's pushback. And so it's important that they understand why we do the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in our culture in particular, we also feel like God has placed us here to reach people who've been impacted by the LDS community and the LDS culture. So do they understand why we don't use some of the words on a Sunday, for example, right? You know, mm-hmm, you never hear us call out the Mormon church on a Sunday.
Right.
And that's part of our philosophy of ministry, part of the Alpine Way.
Yeah, because, John, I think what I've learned, and I'm sure you've learned this too in ministry, is the only thing, or one thing worse than having an empty spot on your org chart, is having someone filling the spot who doesn't really buy in. Now, again, I don't want people to, because people should always be on the lookout for new leaders. So we're not trying to say this bar is like unattainable or you'll never fill out your spot. We're talking about, right, John, we're talking about someone who doesn't really believe in a gateway service. They want the Sunday morning service to be just for Christians. Or they don't really believe in disciple making. Like, it's not really that important to them, helping people pursue God or empowering people to be disciple makers. These are the kinds of things that, to me, would cause me to think twice before I fill that spot.
Well, think about our core values, Brian. You know, I think these go hand in hand with the way our Alpine Way is structured. But do they love God's word? Do they look to God's word? Is it their authority?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they work hard at healthy relationships? The devil loves nothing more than to cause division within a church to pull people away from God, right?
Right.
I mean, that's, other than hypocrisy, that's probably the number one reason people who would say they don't like religion is because of the division within a church that, mm-hmm, they've experienced. Are they willing to give up things they love for things they love more?
Mm.
I mean, that's one of the things that really jumps out at me when I'm evaluating if someone could be a leader at the Logan campus is it always about them? Or are they willing to give up things they love? And, you know, things that are good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But for something that's better.
Right.
So those core values are critical. And are they on mission with Jesus? And do they work hard at healthy relationships?
Yeah. And the truth is, you know, even as you go through those values, John, I just realized, you know, some of those, it's hard to tell. I mean, I've hired pastors in the past that on paper would agree with all that stuff. When you get into it, you realize they didn't really buy into the vision or the mission, or maybe they were gossipy, didn't do relationships in a healthy way like I would hope that they had. So it's one thing to interview somebody and to say, I think they're going to do great because they check off on all five of those things. But it's another thing to have discernment. And really, I think it's important to be praying then for discernment when you've got a spot open, especially an overseer spot or whatever, and just say, God, bring the right person, open my eyes. I always want to be on the lookout for new leaders, but open my eyes, because maybe, like you said, John, maybe it's not going to be the guy I thought it was. Maybe it's going to be a David, the little brother, not the big brother. So, you know, look for leaders. I think back, I think back to 20 plus years of ministry at Alpine, and I think I would never in a million years have guessed some of the people that have stuck around and are key leaders and even pastors at our church. I would have never guessed it. And that's just how awesome God is, that he knows and he cares about this more than we do. He cares about our church being healthy even more than we do. So I think if we're clued in and we're just asking for his guidance, then he'll open our eyes to the right people that need to fill those spots. And then God's church can grow and be healthy. Okay, let's finish by talking, John, let's talk about the org chart in terms of staff, the overseer team, and key leaders. As of right now at Alpine Church, and I know this might change depending on when people are listening to this lesson, but let's go through what are the paid staff, what does the overseer team do, and then let's talk about some of those key leadership roles.
Yeah, fantastic. So right now at each of our campuses, the paid positions would be the lead pastor position and then your support staff, which is your kids church director, your worship director, and then your student director.
Okay. Now, kids church was the first part-time staffer that we had, and we added worship and student afterward. But let's talk for a second about the kids church director, because some of the people listening to this might have to fill that role, right? Sometimes the kids church director moves on when the pastor moves on, whatever. So what are you looking for, let's say, in a kids church director?
Yeah, and just to that point you just made, Brian, you know, for a lot of the guys listening to this, when you step into a role as a lead pastor at the church, these may already be filled. And we're not saying to clean house.
Right.
Right. So just make sure we're clear on that. We're not saying, hey, you got to get a new kids church director.
Right.
In fact, your greatest allies can be the staff that's already in place when you come on board, right? So, yeah, but for your kids' church director, number one, they've got to be organized. There's so much that's going on in any given week with kids' church and shuffling volunteers and scheduling and all the stuff that goes on with that, the materials. Second, I think it'll make your life easier as a lead pastor if your kids' church director is a good recruiter. Now, you're going to want to support him or her in that. You're going to want to be a part of that, but it will make your life easier if they're bold, if they'll go out and ask people to come volunteer and be a part of that.
Yeah, because something we've learned, speaking of leaders and volunteers, is if you think that you're going to fill out your org chart by making announcements every so often from the stage, we've learned that that's just not how it works. The number one best way to get someone to join a team is by a personal invitation. So the kids' church director needs to be willing to always be selling, always be closing. Is that how you say it? Always be closing.
Always be closing,
yep.
ABC.
Yep.
100%. And again, think about our core values. You know, we win as a team, not individuals. That means I shouldn't be recruiting individually. Everybody should be recruiting. And I try to tell all of our leaders in Logan, if you want to make your job easier as a team leader, one of the things you want all of your volunteers to do on your team is recruit. And so one of the videos, and might be getting ahead of myself a little bit, is in that operations training series, is that everyone builds the team. That means everybody's involved in recruiting. Everybody's inviting someone to come and be a part of what they're doing. So that's important. And then the last thing is just with your kids' church director, I think it's crucial that they're a good communicator. You know, they're going to have so many interactions with parents at your campus, particularly young families, right? Because they have younger children. And so it's important that they can communicate the vision, right? That they can communicate, because what's the purpose of kids' church? The purpose of kids' church is to equip mom and dad to actually be the primary pastors in their home, to actually lead their kids to follow Jesus. And so having a kids' church director who can communicate that vision, who can support parents in that vision, is extremely important to the success of that ministry.
Okay, so John, with these three staff positions, these are all part-time positions, right? So the lead pastor is usually full-time, sometimes, depending on the campus, maybe sometimes part-time, but in most likely he's full-time. These people are part-time, so what does it look like to lead the staff when the staff is part-time, right? You're not in the building every day together like maybe some churches you think about. So what does your meeting schedule look like?
Yeah, so I think especially early on for a lead pastor who's new to a role, you're probably meeting with your staff every week. Now, I think eventually you can move to biweekly. So the staff meetings I have in Logan now, I meet with them every other week. we you know, we're all bought in. We're pretty healthy as far as what our teams look like, and they are part time. So if they're giving me 10 hours a week and I'm eating up an hour and a half mm-hmm. of that every week with a meeting, you know, that's going to hinder their ability. But I think at the beginning, as you're building that, connection with them, as you're recognizing what their strengths are, maybe what their weaknesses are, you know, you realize what gets them excited, et cetera. I think meeting weekly is important, and then eventually you can spread it out to twice a month.
Okay, so do you meet with all of them together at the same time weekly? Is it in person? Is it online?
Great question. So in Logan, I met with our team together early on.
Okay.
Now I meet with two of our team together because they're husband and wife, so that's the easiest way to do it. And then my kids' church director I meet with individually typically. Now my kids' church director is a female.
Right.
So the vast majority of our meetings are online.
Right.
Unless either my wife can be there or one of her children can be there, then we'll meet face-to-face.
Yeah, because maybe we should mention right here, like, it's important. Leading leaders, whether staff or not, is we do have a policy as a church to protect our pastors, our male pastors, is don't meet one-on-one with a woman in private, right?
Correct. Well, or even in public, right?
That's
true. So even in a public setting like a restaurant, that's actually a change in our policy from a couple of years ago. So if you have a female on your staff that you're going to be meeting with regularly, it's going to be virtually, or you just need to have somebody else who can be there with you.
Yeah.
So to your first question, if you meet together as a staff, that solves that problem.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so let's talk for a second about evaluations. Because these people are staff members, now we don't do this for the rest of the org chart, but for our staff members, there's an evaluation process. Why don't you talk us through that?
Yeah, so that evaluation process is important. It's something that at the beginning of each ministry year, we set out goals for our staff. And then at the end of the year, we do a review. We see how they did. We talk through that with them. The way I like to do is I kind of ask them to give me their input on how they think they did, and then I give them a score, you know, 1 to 10 in each area. And it's actually tied to their year-end bonus, how they score on that evaluation. So, number one, the goal should be specific and they should be measurable. You know, everybody wants to say, I want more people pursuing God in my ministry next mm-hmm. year. I want more people going full circle. And that's great. That's a great goal, but that's not really measurable. You mm-hmm. know, how many more do you want to have? Or how are you going to measure that? Is it so many handoffs, for example, that you had as a lead pastor? Is it a certain number of people who finished the pursuit this year? So make sure those goals are specific. Make sure they're measurable. And then the other thing that I think is important is that you review them throughout the year. Don't let it. What I would say, sneak up on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to come to 2 weeks before the end of the year and say, well, let's see how you've been doing on your goals. So throughout the year, bring those out. Look at those with your staff. And then just ask them how you can empower them, how you can support them in meeting that goal. You know, again, at the end of the day, they're going to be accountable for the work they put in, for the effort.
Mm-hmm.
But you're their leader. So how can you empower them to be more successful in that?
That's good. Okay, so that's the staff. Now, the next thing is the overseer team. Now, overseers are not paid, but the overseers at the local campus are really important because their job is to come alongside you and to really ultimately to help you as a lead pastor to run the church in a biblical way. And so let's talk a little bit about the overseers, I guess, starting with their qualifications. What qualifies a person to be an overseer at the campus?
Well, the first thing I would look at would be the qualifications that we'd find in Titus and Timothy, right? Like, those are very, very specific. And yeah, I don't know if we'll get into each one of those individually. I personally take a pretty conservative view of those qualifications. So, for example, the husband of one wife, this is just my perspective. I don't even know if this is an official Alpine perspective, mm-hmm. but I typically wouldn't consider someone who's been divorced for that role.
Mm-hmm.
So, but those, that's the first thing I would look at is, what are those qualifications in Titus and Timothy? The second thing is, and we talked about this a little bit, is do they buy into the mission, right? Do they really buy into our Alpine way? Do they buy into our core values? Because there are some godly men out there who love Jesus, and they're even going full circle. They wouldn't call it that, but maybe their idea of discipleship is different than our idea of discipleship,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I've got to make sure that their overseers are bought into what we're trying to accomplish, because they're holding me accountable to that.
Right.
So if they're not bought in, then are they going to hold me accountable? Probably not.
Right. That's good. Well, yeah, so that's maybe the next thing is one of their responsibilities is to hold you accountable as the lead pastor to creating a culture of discipleship. So when you're bringing them on, that's what you say their job is. Look, you're with me. You're not just helping me to do it, but you're holding me accountable to it because it's your job is tied to it. For them, they're supporting you.
I think one of the best things your overseer team can help you do is know when to say no. Hmm. There's so many opportunities we have in ministry to do good things. They're good things, right? Mm-hmm. But again, one of our core values is we give up things we love for things we love more. And there's nothing we love more than seeing people come to Jesus, learn how to live a life that honors him, and then go help the next person do the same thing. So that's been really helpful for me. And I have my overseer team. I have a guy that's just a year or two younger than me. And then I have a guy in his 60s and then a gentleman in his 70s. So that's our overseer. So it's, again, they've got a ton of wisdom. They've been around the block, and they're not afraid to ask me questions. You know, they're not afraid to say, hey, how are we doing in this area? So
that's good.
And in addition to that, to holding me accountable, the other areas where I really value their input is, you know, a church discipline issue. So if I get a report that, you know, one of our leaders is doing, you know, living in a pattern of kind of unrepentant sin, how do we address that? How do we respond to that? And they can help me with that. I always ask my overseers for input on our budget each year and how are we going to spend the money this year and, you know, how can we talk about giving in a productive way and in a way that's encouraging to people and challenging at the same time?
And they should be aware of the budget too, right? They should be aware, the overseer team should be kind of have your back as far as making sure that your campus is doing well in terms of budget, giving, and spending. And so even though they're not going to be involved in that in the day-to-day, like the lead pastor is, some of the accountability is there as well. Like they have to own giving. So, right, John, I don't know if you've ever had to do this. Have you ever had to come together with your overseers and say, hey, we're not making budget right now. We need to somehow make sure that Alpiners are stepping it up and giving, which would start with the overseers, right? Like, guys, I hope you're givers. I hope you're givers because I'm a giver. And let's try to inspire more giving because we're missing the mark.
Totally. And yes, I have had to do that. You know, the first year that I was in the role, we didn't meet budget. And in fact, we had never met budget as a campus. Mm-hmm. I mean, completely met our budget. Mm-hmm. And so we started, you know, beating that drum. We started praying. We prayed a lot that God would just move in the hearts of his people, that they would be faithful. And by year number two, we did meet budget for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. And then year number three, we met it. And then now last year, we didn't quite meet it, or at least not our extra 10%, you know. But so it's been really neat to see God work in that way. And in fact, I have an overseer who confessed. He said, you know, I don't doubt this gentleman's heart at all. He's a very generous guy, but he had been giving more of his money to other organizations because he thought we were meeting budget. And once I explained to him, no, we're not. We've never met budget here. It changed his giving. He started giving more to the church. So,
and related to that then is benevolence, right? So for most of the campuses, the overseers are also involved in benevolence, making decisions around that.
I think it's very helpful. Again, you don't want to make all those decisions on your own. You know, as you can imagine, especially over the last several years with COVID and just, you know, we've got this potential recession that certainly seems to be looming ahead. And so I think you're gonna see an increase in what we call help requests, you know, requests for financial assistance. And certainly we want to be a generous church, but we also want to give wisely. And so it's very helpful for me to have other men who can be praying about it and who can give me their input before we make decisions on that.
And then finally, I think it's important that the overseers know that they should be praying regularly for their campus, just like you are, right?
And not only the campus in general, so what we've done in Logan is I have given each overseer specific ministries at the campus that they're going to be praying for, and they've committed to do that. So yeah, I think that's very important. All of our overseers are on our prayer team, so when a prayer request comes into the campus, you know, they're going to be involved in that as well.
Yep, that's
but
good.
To know they're specifically praying for different ministry teams on a regular basis, and I mean, just to be honest, guys, that means I'm not praying for all of those teams every week because we have over 20 ministry teams, and so for me to pray for them in a significant way every week, probably wouldn't do it. So by dividing that up, I know that every team is being prayed for on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's what in our at our Layton campus, I've given all of those guys oversight over a leg of the org chart, but I've made it clear to them, look, it's not that doesn't mean you need to be involved in every little detail for that org chart, but one of the few things it does mean is that you are providing prayer cover for that area of ministry, and that's I think the leaders in that. In that leg of the ministry, understand that. And I think that's really important, and I think it's biblical.
Yeah, well, I agree. So originally, when I was the lead pastor in Logan, I didn't have it set up this way, and I think you learn some things by hard knocks or by experience. But I have since given each of our overseers has, if not a full leg of the org chart, they do have at least a team or two that they're responsible for. And like you said, that doesn't mean that. So, for example, one of my overseers oversees the coffee team. Now, he's not ordering coffee. He's not ordering supplies. Right. He's not, but he's checking in with my coffee team leader on a monthly basis. Hey, how's it going? Do you need anything? So giving your overseers some responsibility on specific teams or specific legs in your org chart, I think, is a big win.
Yeah, when we did that in Layton, and we did that just recently in Layton, first of all, the overseers really stepped up to the plate. And it was, I think it was kind of a God thing that we happen to have the right number of overseers for the legs in our chart. And actually, again, I think it was a God thing that there was a real natural fit for all of those overseers to oversee a specific leg. So when I brought it to them, they received it. They had some questions about what it did mean, what it didn't mean. But what was even cooler is when we brought it to the leadership team the next month, you know, this church campus-wide leadership meeting, I think it really meant a lot to the leadership team to say, okay, these guys are organized. These guys are thoughtful about this. They know what they're doing. Now, again, these are still volunteers, so these overseers aren't going to be perfect. Things are still going to probably fall through the cracks here and there, but bringing the structure and trying to be clear with the team about the structure and what we're asking them to do in the structure has been a really good step for us at our campus. And so I imagine some people are listening to this. You'll want to make sure to look at your existing org chart. And John, wouldn't you agree? You don't want to make a ton of changes to it right away. But, you know, find those spots where there needs to be a little bit of help. Help fill some of those spots in. And then just really be prayerful about eventually bringing more health to the org chart.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of those areas where if you recognize changes need to be made, slow is fast.
Yeah.
You know, don't go in and just completely revamp it.
Right.
Get a lot of input, a lot of feedback from your existing leaders.
Yeah.
If you're new to the role, you know, listen more than you talk.
Right.
Probably at the very beginning. Right.
Exactly.
And I think that'll go a long way to developing trust. Because most of the guys listening to this, you know, you're either a newer lead pastor or you're going to be a newer lead pastor. And so developing trust within all those volunteers and overseers is important. And then it's important for your overseers to know what they're saying yes to as you're putting new overseers in place. So we do have kind of a role description for overseers that'll be attached to the bottom of this training as well that guys can click on and see that.
John, how often do you meet with your overseers?
I try to meet with them monthly. Every now and then we'll miss, and we might go 6 weeks. But I think ideally a monthly schedule would be best.
And what are you covering with them in that meeting?
So I do a financial update on everyone since we're only meeting once a month just so they know where the budget is. I'm doing org chart conversations if we have holes because I'm asking them to be praying along with me, hey, who can fill this role? So, for example, right now at our campus, we don't have a men's ministry leader. And so we've been praying for that for 2 months. I just had lunch with a gentleman that I thought might be the guy, and he declined. So my next overseer meeting, I'm going to let him know, hey, he declined, so let's keep praying. Has God put anybody on your heart? Again, that meet all these things we talked about. Who's an owner versus a renter? Who's consistently serving already? Who's mentoring? That's the kind of guy that we would want to lead this ministry.
I meet monthly with the overseers in Layton as well. In the first 30 minutes, I encourage people to do this. The first 30 minutes, we do a topic together. Now, currently, we're going through the Systheo series. It's been really fun. It's almost hard to stop at 30 minutes because they want to dive into the conversation. But I love it because, it models what we care about, that I'm mentoring these guys. And also, it just helps equip them and make them feel like we're not just asking them to give, but we're also investing in them. Even if it's just for that little half hour slot, they really enjoy it. So I encourage people to do that with their overseer team as well. Last thing, John, let's talk about some key leaders. So in the org charts, we've got some staff members are going to fill some of those holes. Some overseers might fill some of those spots, and then key leaders are the last thing we want to talk about.
Yeah, if you look at your org chart, the majority of leaders who are going to have a name on a box are all volunteers. I mean, there's four staff at a campus, and most of us have, you know, 24, 25 different service teams all together. So it's going to be primarily volunteers. And again, the qualifications that you're looking for are essentially the same thing we've been talking about. Who's bought in, who's mentoring, who's serving, who's consistent. And then one of the things that we spent a lot of time doing, it's been several years ago now, is developing a role description for each one of those boxes on the org chart. Because one of the most frustrating things is being asked to come in and volunteer, but then not being told what the expectations are. What do you want me to do? How do I do it? And I think that's something we're getting better at. I would recommend that you take those volunteers through the operations training. It's a 3-video series. We can put a link down for that as well. Mm-hmm. It talks about being an owner, not a renter. It talks about building the team. And it talks about really we serve the Lord when we're volunteering. But it's just a really good, concise, you know, three lesson training that I would take every one of your team leaders through. And then the other thing I would just, again, we talked about the value of having a visual org chart. When you're thinking about who you're going to put in those different roles, I think it's helpful to think about which teams are they going to interact the most with. You know, is there someone that is just already in that person's circle of influence? Maybe they already have a relationship, they already have a connection. I think that can be really helpful as well.
All right. Anything else we need to touch on here as we talk about leading leaders, John?
I would just maybe bring it back around to what we opened with, Brian. Like, it really is going to have a bigger impact on the growth and the success of your ministry than anything we can do. Now, the Holy Spirit's, you know, got to do what only the Holy Spirit can do, but you've got to learn how to equip. Well, first off, you've got to learn how to identify and then equip and empower other people to join you in the ministry. If you don't give it away, you're going to get stuck.
That's good. Well, if you're talking about this with a group or a mentor, you can find discussion questions right below this audio link. And then don't forget, join us for week number 2 as we continue on in lead pastor training.